Welcome to the Wednesday, June 7th, 2017 session of the Court of Appeals, our last session for this term. I'm Rico Bishop. I'm pleased to be joined by Chief Judge Franklin Boren on my right and Judge Mike Purtle on my left. I want to remind all of you that we are being live streamed on ADT, so if you have any sensitive information, be respectful of names. Also, we have three cases scheduled for today, but we will now only have two due to a request of the parties. So we're beginning with Ganzel v. Ganzel, and I will repeat the case names as you come forward to the podium for purposes of the report. So we're ready to proceed with Ganzel v. Ganzel.
Would you reserve 2 minutes?
Again, this is Ganzel v. Ganzel. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Lyle Koenig. I appear on this cause on behalf of Norman Ganzel. I have been at the bar for 45 years. I have appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court of Nebraska, and this court, and I have never previously uttered these words. There is plain error in this record, and this is the error. My client, Norman Ganzel, was ordered to be paid the sum of $296,224.77 of money that they claim came into his possession during the 6 years that he served as his mother's power of attorney. And we vigorously dispute whether we got all of that money, but for a moment, just consider it. Assuming that he did get all of that money. At the same time, there's an exhibit, exhibit number 14, that tells you about the hundreds of checks he wrote for his mother's maintenance. He wrote checks for real estate taxes, other taxes, insurance premiums, groceries, lawn maintenance, all of her personal expenses. He is being ordered to pay back all of that money. But you see, he has no legal obligation to support his mother. So if he pays all of that money back, that means that all of the money that he paid for her support comes out of his pocket. Remember, this was a joint account that he had with his mother. So if he pays back all the money that he took in, who pays for her support for those 6 years? And the answer is, he does. And that's an illegal order because he's under no legal obligation to pay that. So that order forcing him to pay all of that money back is clearly an error.
In what way could he show that the money came from that account and went back to pay for her needs?
Because, Your Honor, there is exhibit 14 shows all of the checks he wrote for her maintenance, for her personal expenses.
But that wasn't his actual ledger, right?
That's right. His ledger did not come in, although he did testify as to the amount that he paid. But that is their evidence. Exhibit 14 was their evidence, and it showed the checks that he wrote, and it showed the checks for insurance and various other things. Well, if he pays all of that money back, that means that that money comes out of his pocket. So that means that he pays for all of her care and maintenance for that 6 years. That has to be error.
Wasn't a lot of problem just the sufficiency of evidence to establish where that money went?
Well, but then there's nothing insufficient about what I'm just telling you, because the judge said, here's the order, you pay back $296,000, and there's exhibit 14 that shows you the checks that he wrote. So you have all of the evidence that proves that point. Secondly.
So the checks that he wrote is one thing to show specifically that they went to Bernice's needs.
Right, exactly. Exhibit 14 shows that. And there's no other conclusion that can be drawn, because he was ordered to pay back every dime that they claimed that he wrote, with the exception of the Social Security payments, and they were a minuscule amount, I think $400 a month or something like that. And so if he has to pay back everything else, then he ends up paying all of her support out of his pocket. There's no other way to analyze that.
So in your brief, you indicate that $59,000 of their own money was used.
Yeah.
So are you saying?
It's a lot more than that, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, but that's not what you argued in the brief.
Well,
now raising something for the first time in the oral argument.
Well, I'm not exactly, because if you look at my brief, I did claim that the court's order to require us to pay the $296,000 back was an error. And so I
said it was unsupported by insufficient evidence.
That's right. And I don't want to go to that, if I may. Obviously, in this case, the facts are in irreconcilable conflict. There were four drafts in the amount of $212,000 that were alleged to have been given to Norman by Jill Zimmerman at the Pinnacle Bank. One was allegedly handed to him on September 29th, 2014. But he wasn't there on September 29th.
Well, that's what his story was.
Well, no, Your Honor. Actually, I took a look at the transcript, the DOE, this morning before I came in, and on page 319 of the DOE, lines 1 to 4, Ms. Zimmerman said that her earliest recollection of Norm would have been early October of 2008, after his father passed away. His father passed away on October 2nd. Now, I'll remind you of a case that is not in my brief. But in Bear versus Schott, and that's 171 Nebraska 347, the court said, where a witness gives testimony, which as to a material fact is in such obvious and irreconcilable conflict that if a part of it is true, the rest must be false, it cannot be accepted as a basis for judicial conclusion. If Jill Zimmerman's testimony is true, that she first met Norman in early October of 2008, then her testimony that she handed him a draft of $50,000 on September 29th of 2008 has to be false. Therefore, under the holding in Shaw, her evidence can't be accepted as a basis for judicial conclusion. I think you should reject it altogether, because it cannot be true.
Was that a question for the fact finder?
Well, yeah, and I know what you're going to say, Your Honor, but remember that the rule is, while you don't evaluate the credibility of the witness or reweigh testimony, the rule is you do review evidence for clear error. It is clear error, and the judge ordered us to pay that $50,000 back. It is clear error to order Norm Gamzel to pay that back when her evidence can't be true. If she didn't meet Norm until early October, it's impossible for her to have handed him a draft on September 29th of 2014. And moreover, the evidence is, and this is from their witness, not ours, it's from their witness, Darwin Gamzel, that he called his brother Norman, who was in Indianapolis, Indiana, around the 29th, and that he didn't arrive in Beatrice, Nebraska until October 1st. Well, she didn't hand him a draft on September 29th if he was in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's a 14-hour trip.
But what about the other evidence that you're talking about is in 22? September 29th, check.
Yes, Your
Honor. Payable to Norman.
Yes.
And it was canceled on October 9th, endorsed by Norman Gansel, and deposited into the community bank in Indiana, his account.
We disputed that. Anybody could write Norman Gansel on the back of the bank, on the back of the draft. They
have evidence that somebody else did that?
Well, he denied it. He denied that he endorsed it, and they didn't call an expert to verify the fact that it was his signature. So we don't know whose signature it is. Moreover, they didn't have the originals of these documents, of these checks. They didn't have, well, you've seen the record, so you know they're not there. You have a picture copy of the front of the draft and you have the back. But I know that today it's possible to lift the signature off of the document. So, you know, he denied that he signed it. Anybody could write that on there. His brother or anyone else or whoever got the draft could have certainly signed Norman Gannon to it.
And deposited it into his Norman's account?
Well, I don't know. Isn't that the, is, there were, was that in the, what, the credit account, the credit union account?
Oh, that was in,
well, all right, but he denied that he got it. So, given the evidence as we have it, I'm going to run out of time. Given the evidence that he did not get the draft, I mean, how do you reconcile the fact that Jill Zimmerman says that she gave him the draft when she didn't meet him until early October? I mean, it either has to, and listen, they claim that she doesn't have a dog in this house. If you just gave $212,000 of your depositor's money to the wrong person, I think she's got some considerable motive to falsify. So the suggestion that she didn't have any motive to tell the truth is not true. Anyway, my time's up. I'm sorry. I always run out of time. May I be excused? Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeff Hupka. I'm the attorney for the appellee in this matter. Bernice Ganzel's daughter and guardian is present with me in court, my client. I would like to respond a little bit to the appellant's argument. First of all, it misstates the evidence. The evidence is that the order, the judgment entered in our favor by Judge Forsling repay orders Mr. Ganzel to repay a portion of the checks written out of the Exhibit 14 bank account. Exhibit 15 is a delineation of the checks that we seek to recover, and the judge did allow those to be recovered. The checks that we are wanting to be recovered are checks where Mr. Ganzel paid his own real estate taxes in the state of Indiana, where Mr. Ganzel paid money to his wife, where Mr. Ganzel paid money to the Indiana Department of Motor Vehicles to license his own vehicles. There were, in fact, and Appellant is right, several checks for Bernice Ganzel's care and keeping, and we are not disputing this. We're not asking to be repaid every penny that was spent on the account. Appellant misstates that. The judgment that was entered is only for those checks that were very clearly written by Norman for Norman's own use. The stipulation in evidence at trial was that all of the money spent at Exhibit 15 and then the cash transfers and electronic transfers at Exhibit 18, none of them were for the use of Bernice Ganzel.
Can you speak to, there were a couple of cashier's checks that were dated October 7, 2008, but the cancellation on the bag indicates that they were canceled on October 2nd.
I certainly can. There's testimony from Jill Zimmerman, who is a longtime bank employee, and she's the manager of the branch that this all took place in Beatrice. She has some substantial background in the banking industry, and if you review her testimony and look closely at the documents, where the two appears on the cancellation, and I don't have it in front of me, so I may be wrong, but it's off-center, as if there was a space, and she says in the canceling machine, when you set them up in the morning for that day's business, if they're not done right, it can sometimes be off a notch, and so it could be inferred that that should have actually been canceled on the 12th or the 22nd of the month, but that too shouldn't be in the single digit column, it should be in the, it should be the second two digits. But there is explanation from her about that, and it's in effect a mechanical error. And I guess I would carry on with that to again reiterate, and the court very appropriately pointed out, the September 29th check is called into great question, but really it is our very best evidence. Exhibit number 22 was taken out of Pinnacle Bank and endorsed by Mr. Ganzel. I don't believe we have the burden of bringing in a handwriting expert. I think that the inference is that that is, in fact, his handwriting. His sister, who grew up with him and knew him all his life, testified she was familiar with the signature, and that as his sister only, not as an expert, she believed it. So he did endorse it, and it was canceled through the Community Bank in Indiana, and as indicated in my brief and in the evidence at Exhibit 22, the bank account number, which I believe ends in 1275, is below the cancellation, showing exactly which account it went into, and it went into the Bernice and Norman account, and so it clearly was taken out of the address and Pinnacle Bank and put into her account. The idea that it's a theft or a forgery is just absolutely out of the realm of possibility. The fact is that to work a hardship on Mr. Ganzel by having him repay money that he charitably paid for the care and keeping of his mother is incorrect. All except for $983, every nickel of that account was put in by Bernice Ganzel, or out of Bernice Ganzel's funds.
Does the record reveal why the actual canceled checks went off?
It is not in the record. There is also, with Jill Zimmerman's testimony, there was questioning as to had she reviewed the bank's actual records and did the exhibits 19, 20, 21, 22 accurately reflect the images of the checks and the backs of the checks, she testified that they did. I don't believe, it's not on the record, but I don't believe there would have been actual checks available. Part of the problem, and also the problem with whether somebody came and went on September 29th or when, the facts of this case took place in 08, early 09. It didn't get discovered until 2014 and come to court until 2016. And so, some 7 or 8 years later, I think memory's fading. I would also point out quickly, and then I'll close, with regard to the payment of real estate taxes and taking care of the yard and things of that nature, the fact is that Exhibit 34 is a deed where Norman, as power of attorney, and it is in evidence, as power of attorney, took his mother's house and put it in his own name in 2009. So the legal argument would be that the reason Mr. Ganzel was paying the real estate taxes was because he had taken the house, and it was at that time his house. So, and I would have to double check. I don't believe we sought recovery of those funds because obviously Mrs. Ganzel didn't get the benefit. Anyway, the remarkable part of this case is, Your Honors, that the testimony of the plaintiff and the witnesses is borne out absolutely by the documentary evidence. And we were very fortunate to have recovered the checks that we did and the images and be able to present them. There can be no question as to what took place back in 2008 and 2009. And I would just, in closing, point out to the court, as Judge Forslund did in his order, that when questioned that Mr. Ganzel was the power of attorney at this time and that over $200,000 is missing from his mother's account, he frankly did not care about that situation. And I think that just shows his entire approach to this case. The fact is he was acting as power of attorney and he did gift money to himself or get the benefit of it. And that establishes the pre-patient case in Nebraska for breach of fiduciary duty. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't believe Mr. Coney has any time left for rebuttal, so thank you very much for hearing today. And the matter is submitted.
Thank you.